This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 13th of September 2013. Hello and a warm welcome to Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 13th of September 2013, which this week has been edited by Barbara Chase, beavering away manfully, or should that be womanfully, editing on her own this week. I am Peter Lydiard, your presenter for today, standing in for your usual presenter, John Parker. Your readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
Albie Minns.
Hello.
And Ros Lydia.
Hello.
Now, as this is Friday the 13th, as we record this, be warned, anything might happen. Well, first, shall we look at some of the activities which might be of interest taking place in the next week or so? Rayods at the Plaza Romsey are presenting a new adaptation of Charlotte Bronte's Jane Eyre from the 17th to the 21st of September. On October the 2nd, Andrew Cleave, author and natural history specialist, is giving a talk to the Winchester and District Royal Society for the Protection of Birds at Shawford Parish Hall at 7:45. On Sunday, October the 6th, there's an open day at Twyford Waterworks from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Apart from the 113-year-old waterworks, there will be classic cars plus a free vintage bus running from Winchester Railway Station to the Broadway to Twyford Waterworks and presumably back again. If you're interested in attending the last night of the proms at Winchester Guild Hall on the 19th of October, you will be entertained by the Hampshire Constabulary Band with Martin Murphy singing in the style of Michael Bublé. Tickets are £49.50, but you do get a three-course meal included. Tickets from Paul Murray on 07831 173503. That's 07831 173503. Also on the 19th of October, The Dream of Gerontius is being performed in Winchester Cathedral. But this is not the usual Elgar version. It's a new version by Julian Chilcot Monk and features, amongst others, the actor Robert Hardy. Well, while we're in October, don't miss the next Chesil Theatre production, Transit of Venus, by Maureen Hunter, which is being performed from the 12th to the 19th of October. This is a play which explores faith, solitude, and the human spirit. I mention this specially because a certain Ros Lydiard, sitting barely 3 feet away from me in this production, and she will be, I am assured, on sparkling form. Right, now, she's given me that look. Now, lighting up times for the coming week. On Friday the 13th of September, the sun rose at 6:38 a.m. and set at 7:27 p.m. On Wednesday the 18th of September, lighting up time will end at 6:46 a.m. and begins again at 7:13 p.m. Now, if you know of someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Lynn Parker on 01962 862826. That's 01962 862826. If you'd like to skip any particular item on the recording, you can press the forward button on the top of your Sapphire player to move on to another track. Now, we have the main headlines from the Hampshire Chronicle this week, which are New River Park may double in size, reverse gear for city parking strategy, growling chihuahua scares off attacker. Margot, please may we hear the story behind the first headline.
New River Park may double in size. Plans for a replacement leisure centre could see the River Park almost doubling in size at an estimated cost of £25 million. The City Council is proposing to build a bigger facility on the playing field next to the existing centre to meet the needs of a growing population. It would mean the loss of a cricket pitch and green open space. But it would be a larger complex, with a footprint of about 8,000 square metres compared to the existing 4,750 square metres. During building work, estimated to take at least 2 years, the current centre, which does need major repairs, would remain open. Once building work is finished, the old building will be bulldozed to make way for a proposed 300-space car park, more than twice the size of the existing one. But in a blow for Penguin Swimming Club and Fit for the Future, an umbrella group of sports clubs campaigning for improved sports facilities in Winchester, the council is not currently proposing to build a 50-metre pool. Instead, proposed new facilities include a 10-lane, 25-metre pool, plus a 20-metre teaching pool, hydrotherapy and rehabilitation pool. A report to be considered by Cabinet on Wednesday said, although a 50-metre pool would be subdivided for flexible use, it could only be justified if there was extensive use of its full length. Officers said a 50-metre pool would only be of benefit to a relatively small number of competitive swimmers. But Sue Falconer, chairman of Penguin Swimming Club, said, "We have 900 members in our club and a waiting list of 200. That is not a small number." Mrs. Falconer said a bigger pool would also benefit the wider community. She said, "This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to build the right thing for the city. A 10-lane, 25-metre pool is a poor compromise." Meanwhile, discussions will continue over whether the new centre should include a dedicated gymnastics hall. Other proposed new facilities include a main hall with 8 to 10 courts, 150 to 180 station fitness centre, 4 dance studios, 4 squash courts, a cafe, a bar, a reception and children's play area. In addition, there would be artificial grass pitches for five-a-side football, separate wet and dry dressing rooms, and up to 6 tennis courts. The council is inviting sports clubs and other organisations and individuals who use the centre to a public meeting in the Guildhall on Thursday, September the 26th, starting at 7:30 p.m, to discuss the proposals. Council leader Keith Wood said, "Our guiding principle is to ensure that quality leisure centre facilities continue to be provided for all of our residents at a price that Winchester can afford." The council also looked at possibly locating the centre at King George V playing fields. But the council's consultants, Savills, concluded more people could walk to River Park and there were fewer planning issues. Cabinet chiefs were asked to approve spending £100,000 on technical reports over the next 3 months, including water table reports, drainage, transport and ecology surveys. City Council consultants Continuum estimated the cost of the proposed new centre at about £25 million. If a 50-metre pool and gymnastics hall were added, the cost could rise to more than £30 million in total.
Reverse Gear for City Parking Strategy by Rachel Masker. Council chiefs have been accused of a U-turn over plans to increase city centre parking in Winchester under a radical review. The Tory-controlled council is considering selling off car parks, including the Cattle Market in Andover Road, Worthy Lane, Upper Brook Street and Chesil Street to make way for development. But the total number of car parking spaces would increase by 519 under proposals for 330 parking spaces at Silver Hill to replace the 250 at Friars Gate and bigger decked car parks at the railway station, Glaston Road and Middle Brook Street, the site of the farmers' market. Other suggestions include reintroducing Sunday and evening parking charges in central shopping car parks. Meanwhile, possible developments in the city include a revamp of the Winchester Railway area, a new doctor's surgery on Upper Brook Street car park, and extra care sheltered housing for the elderly at a site yet to be revealed. The draft parking strategy, which has been broadly welcomed by the business community, has come under fire from Winchester Friends of the Earth for adding to air pollution and congestion. Chris Gillam, chairman of the Green Campaign Group, criticised the strategy for promoting journeys into the car-clogged centre. He accused council leaders of going back on a long-term strategy to cut city centre parking as park and ride on the outskirts of the city was built. Ms Gillam said the air pollution in Winchester is illegal and something needs to be done about it and reducing traffic levels. It is beyond belief that they are considering building more car parking in the centre. He added, the council made a commitment to the Department of Transport and Highways Agency to remove car parking equivalent to park and ride provision about 1,300 places. But I think only about 50 places in Jury Street and a few in St Peter's car park have been removed. However, Stephen Gates, chairman of Winchester Chamber of Commerce and managing director of city-based Denplan, said viability of local businesses, the economy and visitor experience should be given uppermost consideration. It does feel like there is a shift here to accepting and encouraging people to come and visit Winchester and help people to work in the city, he said. But the business boss sounded a note of caution on introducing the evening parking charges, saying it could hit Winchester's vibrant nighttime economy. Some 400 additional park and ride places will be provided at Barton Farm and Pitt Manor under council proposals. The council said a report to Cabinet was the first stage in developing an off-street parking strategy. There will be further consultation on detailed car parking occupancy and user surveys before a final strategy is drawn up in November. Councillor Jan Warwick, portfolio holder for Neighbourhoods and the Environment, said, "The key challenges for us are how we set about balancing demands and provision in order to achieve a range of objectives, including addressing environmental issues, supporting the local economy, and meeting the needs of local residents." A council spokesman said, "The thinking behind consolidating car parking onto fewer, better located sites is that it would reduce the need for unnecessary trips through the city centre where air quality issues exist."
Growling chihuahua scares off attacker. Mum and baby's ordeal as man tries to get in car. A 10-inch tall chihuahua has been hailed a hero after scaring off a man who attempted to wrench open a car door with a terrified woman and baby inside. Little Piccolo saw off the attacker as Mum Charlie Preston from Winchester desperately battled to prevent him opening the front door of the car she and 18-month-old Lily were sitting in. The 25-year-old managed to slam down the lock for the back door as the man repeatedly shouted, "Get out and come with me." But her ordeal only came to an end when her pale cream pet leapt onto Lily's lap before barking and snarling at the man, who then released the door and ran off. The drama unfolded while she was waiting in the family's Vauxhall Corsa, parked in Magpie Lane, Eastleigh. Partner Rob Smart, 25, had been gone a matter of minutes to collect an ornamental wall hanging from the kitchen that he had purchased from eBay. Police have launched a manhunt and want witnesses to the incident to come forward. Full-time mum, Ms Preston, from Charles Close, said, "I was terrified. I kept stammering at him to stop it and leave us alone. My strength was clearly no match for the man who kept telling me to get out of the car." She said the man, described by the police as black, muscular and aged in his late 20s, suddenly appeared before opening the car door and aggressively ordering her to get out. She is still unsure as to his exact motive, but feared he wanted to abduct her daughter or launch an attack. The man, who was not wearing a shirt, finally backed off and ran away when Piccolo unleashed a noise worthy of a lion. He growled loudly, and the man let go of the door and backed off into a run, she added. God knows what would have happened if it wasn't for my dog. My daughter and I could have been in real trouble. If he had got me out of the car, he could have hurt or abducted my baby girl. It really has shaken me up, especially because my daughter was in the car. It was not until afterwards and the shock had gone until I realised what would have happened if we'd not been lucky enough to have the dog in the car. I think Piccolo could sense the fact that I was scared. He is a little hero. Partner, Mr. Smart, a web engineer, returned to the car shortly after the incident last Saturday at 9 p.m. and the pair dialed 999. He said, I feel incredibly lucky that nothing has happened to my family. I cannot articulate how awful this is. My daughter fills my world. Police arrived on the scene, but could not find anyone matching their description. Witnesses have been told to call police on 101 or Crime Stoppers anonymously on 0800 555 111. That's 0800 555 111.
Thank you. Well, after those headline stories, we'll continue first with the death notices, followed by Christian comment, then letters to the editor, historical items, chronicle comment, and first person. So the death notices. Bull, Eileen Bull, peacefully, 1st of September, age 92. Carrington, Alan Carrington, CBE, FRS, distinguished research scientist, peacefully, 31st of August, aged 79. Morris, Dulcie Eve Morris, peacefully, 3rd of September, aged 88. Moss, Peter Bill Moss, 5th of September, aged 82. Not, Peter Norman Not, peacefully, 8th of September, aged 75. Rabban, Barbara Ann Rabban, previously deputy head teacher of Danemark School, Winchester, peacefully, 5th of September, aged 93. Smith, Joan Smith, peacefully, 7th of September, aged 90. Wheeler, Bill Wheeler, formerly of Priorsdean Road, 6th of September, aged 86. And Woodgate, Eric George Woodgate, peacefully, on the 5th of September. Well, now we have a Christian comment read this week by Margot, please.
And this week it's written by Canon Rowley Ream. He's entitled it, Revolution is Not So Bad for the Church. The statistics don't lie. Many aspects of church life in Hampshire are in decline. For example, a 7% drop in Church of England attendances since 2006, with an even sharper drop among children and young people. For those who care about these things, there are many ways of burying one's head in the sand. For those who are inclined to blame themselves, there is the option of guilt and redoubled effort. For those who are ecumenically minded, there's the hope of other churches attracting those who used to come to us. Many will look for some new activity to boost their own numbers, or try to do things a little differently. 20 years ago, family services were all the rage, and added to the menu of what local churches had to offer. Now, these seem tired and out of date. It's easier to think and make small adjustments inside the box. However, history doesn't encourage small thinking. The church in Wessex was founded by a missionary bishop, Berinus, in the 7th century. He came from Italy with the Pope's blessing and stopped off in this area precisely because church attendance was zero. The type of church that was planted here was not a carbon copy of what was in Europe. Anyway, this was in the days before religious practices were standardised here in the 10th century. History contains a series of revolutions, each leaving their scars on the old fabric, but each providing fresh opportunities for growth. Each time, the church was in the grip of forces far more powerful than its own tidy schemes of order and belief. The church could continue through upheaval because of people faithful in suffering and determined in vision. People like Bishop Morley in the 17th century. He was forced from England in the time of the Commonwealth. Once the monarchy was restored, however, he returned to reconcile different factions under the king's rule with a revamped Book of Common Prayer. Morley was only partially successful in what he did, but no system can contain the whole of an untidy and fluid society, either then or now. The church is again living in bracing times, and the qualities demanded of those who care about its future are courage to face reality and the imagination to believe that growth sometimes comes about through revolution. God is not confined to tweaking.
Thank you, Margot. We now have letters to the editor, starting with Albie, please.
Are we getting value for taxes? Sir, having read the report on the police commissioner's residential problems, may I express the view that for me it would not matter where he lives, because he has refused to deal with a matter I asked him to help with. Perhaps there are satisfied customers who can make me believe we are receiving value for our taxes. Freddie Crabb, Hensting Lane, Ossulbury.
This is a letter from Michael J. Beer of Cheriton. Bowl expansion, a creeping cancer. Sir, I write on behalf of many residents within the South Downs National Park following the disgrace that was Boomtown 2013. The four-day Boomtown Festival was attended by some 29,999 people, but there were apparently far more than the licence permits. Why does the landowner not support rural events? The answer is simple, because it does not make huge amounts of money. Great disturbance was caused for communities in Cheriton and Titchbourne by loud music being played past 4 a.m, contravening licence conditions. This is later than at Glastonbury. How can that be justified in the national park? During the event, another young person died. Seizure of drugs amounted to £130,000, and there were arrests for dealing and theft. The area is left in a disgraceful state for many weeks, so another question. Is this really what the South Downs National Park wants to promote as a first impression entering from the west? The park starts at Cheesefoot Head, and this area is of historic interest and outstanding natural beauty, and should remain so for the benefit of most of the public. The expansion of events here is like a creeping cancer. It is not just in the bowl, but development and loud music has apparently taken place in woodland to the east of the site too. The wildlife once thrived, deer, hares, badgers, and numerous owls and many other bird species. These have declined significantly due to events such as Boomtown and associated loss and disruption of habitat, added to which is the severe traffic disruption and cars queuing for hours, with the inherent pollution. All of the organisers' planning and management counts for nothing, with the whole event being a shambles from start to finish. Local communities have a right to enjoy their properties, and visitors to the SDNP to enjoy the peace of the countryside. Michael J. Beer, Cheriton.
Floral Group is forced to disband, writes David Platt. Sir, for some 30 years, Winchester in Bloom has been helping to improve the environment of the city with floral displays, encouraging retail shops in the high street to put up hanging baskets, and by organising garden, photographic and children's competitions. The highlight came 10 years ago when Winchester came first in Southern in Bloom and second in the National Britain in Bloom competition. Since then, however, it has been very difficult to keep Winchester in Bloom going, with six very experienced members of the committee leaving the group during the last 5 years, coupled with a lower level of interest in the gardening competitions year on year. Accordingly, at a committee meeting a few weeks ago, it was decided that there was no option but to close Winchester in bloom for the present, but remain in the hope that some keen gardeners may bring it back in the future. David Platt, Acting Chairman, Winchester in Bloom.
Now a letter from Peter Grant, Chairman of St Swithin Street and Simmons Street Residents Association, and written from Simmons Street, Winchester. No inclination to enforce signage. Sir, whilst I can't comment on the incident referred to by ex-vigilante letters September 5, I can report that my members share his views about the extent and ill effects of the law-breaking by motorists who pass through our two streets en route to the square. There is no doubt some rat run because of their ignorance of traffic signs, but there is also a high degree of willful law-breaking due to the lack of enforcement. In May 2012, after completion of the original paving work in the square, a one-day survey by Hants County Council revealed that of the 721 motorists stopped, 66%, 476, admitted that they were accessing destinations beyond Market Street, that is to say, through traffic. Some 47% of drivers admitted that they were aware of the restrictions. The actual number aware of the law was likely to be significantly higher because others would not be prepared to admit, when questioned, that they were law breakers. A further traffic count in Great Minster Street in January this year, prior to the additional repaving, showed that in 1 week, an average of 813 vehicles used the road each day between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., an average of 67 per hour. There will no doubt shortly be a further survey to see whether the repaving has made any difference. But why should it? The only things to deter persistent offenders would be some well-publicised prosecutions. But the powers that be show no inclination to enforce their own signage. The laws they have passed are fine. It is the enforcement that is lacking. If enforcement is impractical, the only alternative is a movable physical barrier in Great Minster Street, in like manner to that in College Street, but much prettier, please. Great Minster Street was completely closed for 10 weeks this year, and 4 months in 2012, and the world didn't come to an end on either occasion.
Energy providers must come clean, says Peter Mucci. Sir, you are quite right to say that planners must get to grips with the science of wind farms, editorial September the 5th. I have worked on the technical side of renewable energy for years and can assure you that providers of wind, wave and solar know with great accuracy what outputs they can expect from their installations. It is no surprise to scientists and engineers that wind farms rarely reach the capacity claimed for them. A check of published data shows the outputs of UK wind farms to range from 2 to 27% of claimed generation, data which should be regularly available to the public for any given wind farm. You also point out that the providers of renewable energy milk government subsidies, i.e. the taxpayer, so it is only right they meet certain conditions. I therefore suggest all companies involved in these installations should 1. Quote predicted outputs prior to approval and accept penalties if these are not met. 2. Agree to create free public access websites showing real-time output data. And 3. Register their companies in the UK for tax purposes. That's Peter Mucci, Parsonage Lane, Durley.
Paul Hamilton says the viaduct isn't just for those on foot. Sir, I was interested to see a follow-up about the rude cyclist on Hockley Viaduct from letters of September the 5th. I sympathise with Mr. Stamford, but he missed the point. Hockley Viaduct is not a footpath, but a shared-use path, a national cycle route, on which all users, including horse riders, are welcome and would do well to be courteous. Sustrans was one of the partners in providing the scenic off-road route. When it works well. Incidentally, National Cycle Route 23 goes past Mr. Stamford's front door. Cycling on footpaths is indeed illegal and can be addressed by a court appearance when the fine may be £500, that is for careless cycling and dangerous cycling, both go up to £1,000. Britain does not do on-the-spot fines, though there is a chance of a £30 fixed penalty notice issued by a police officer. Please do not tar us all with the same brush. We are not arrogant. Many cyclists are concerned about the environment and are a great bunch. They are bound by the same rules as other road users, as set out in the Highway Code, and may suffer the same penalties. I found that by adhering to the rules and being courteous to others, they are often courteous back, and often to my benefit. While vaguely on the subject of Hockley Viaduct, last week I met a gentleman who lives in Compton and works in St. Thomas Street. He uses NCR 23 over the viaduct and as far as Wharf Hill. So the viaduct is in use as a commuter route. Well done, that man. Paul Hamilton, Sustrans Ranger 9857, Colson Close, Winchester.
No shortage of primary places. Sir, your article, Schools Crisis Looms, Chronicle, September 5th, compels me to reiterate that we are not anticipating a shortage of primary school places in the coming years across Hampshire. In fact, we plan to invest £165 million in new schools and classrooms over the next 3 years to provide 8,000 new places. And in the current academic year alone, we have ensured more than 900 additional places have been made available. Your article cited Romsey and North Baddersley, but we are well prepared. An additional 210 places have been provided at Coopenham Infant and Junior Schools, at a cost of £4 million. We will provide 90 more places at Nursling Primary at a cost of £1 million and 30 at Rownham St John's Primary at a cost of £0.5 million. School places forecasting is complex. It relies not just on birth rates, but new housing, where infill rather than large-scale development makes it more difficult to forecast. At the same time, more and more families are moving into Hampshire. While oversubscription can give the impression that there is a shortage of places, that is not usually the true picture. The number of spare places we have to balance against the number of children seeking to start school is the principal factor we seek to predict and respond to. There is no evidence to support UKIP claims that these pressures are caused by immigration, save in Rushmore and Borden, where we have made provision for the children of Gurkha families. This year, the county handled 14,000-plus applications, with 98% given a place at one of their preferred primary schools and all children starting having a place. Councillor Peter Edgar, Executive Member for Education, Hants County Council.
Diane Reeves, Downs Road, South Wanston. Andover Road, I'm going to miss you. Sir, how I shall miss the delight and joy that the beautiful Hampshire views have bestowed upon me as I journeyed along Andover Road. 40 years of passing you in all your glorious seasons that lifted the heart and spirit. Along with many others, I know your dreadful fate, for it is sealed. Destroyed forever, hundreds of years of undulating countryside by heartless, ruthless men and women with no interest in beauty or history. Only tarmac, traffic, rooftops shall now be seen instead of glorious colour, green, amber and gold, all will be grey. I loved you, Andover Road. The memory of you will stay forever, warming my desolate heart. So says Diane Reeves of Downs Road, South Wanston, Winchester.
Douglas Patterson says Bullington Cross among the worst. Sir, at every opportunity, Martin Heath insists that the proposed wind farm site near Bullington Cross is windy, as if continual repetition will somehow make it so. Available data shows it would be in the worst performing 5% of sites in the UK. Nationally, 10% of our installed generating capacity is in the form of wind turbines. As I write, new data from Elexon shows a negligible 0.3% of UK electricity coming from wind, including Scotland and offshore. Windless days are a regular occurrence, especially when demand is high in the middle of winter. Mr. Heath seems to have ruled out nuclear power, as well as fossil fuels, so I wonder where he thinks 99.7% of our electricity would come from. There is an irony in his position as lobbyist for EDF's wind farm. The main interest big energy firms have in building wind farms is to access the ROC certificates, which they need to produce electricity from what Mr. Heath calls dirty and dangerous sources, such as fossil fuel and nuclear. Since coal is currently dirt cheap, irony there, it is the most profitable form of generation, so companies are desperate to get hold of these ROC permits to pollute. Companies like EDF are only responding rationally to an absurd energy policy in which ideology, political and vested interests have formed a toxic combination. To generally reduce emissions, as well as having a secure electricity supply, we need a sensible balance between gas, nuclear and renewables of the future rather than the past. We do not need wind farms on poor sites, trashing countryside and making many people angry. Worst of all, the feeble output of wind turbines only ensures we will be unable to cease generating from coal, the worst possible polluter. Douglas Patterson, Chairman, Keep Hampshire Green, Hunton Grange, Sutton Scotney.
And now a letter under the heading Condemned by Vocal Minority. Sir, Boomtown rocked by new salvo of criticism from a tiny, tiny vocal minority. What about everyone else? There were 8 complaints this year. Yes, 8. So why is this news versus all the people who had a joyous time? I write to express my extreme disagreement over some of the reporting of Boomtown. Myself and other parents came and went collecting daughters attending, and it was a very straightforward and well-organized process. And we quizzed our children about various aspects of the festival, and it was clearly again a well-thought-through, organized event. My impression is that just because it doesn't involve dahlias or cupcakes, certain people are looking to find reasons to object. Boomtown is people, mostly, but not exclusively young, having noisy fun for one weekend. Surely anyone can put up with that for just one weekend a year. As my parents in their 80s said, if you don't like it, surely you can find somewhere to go once a year so such a large number can have a great time. Why should the bar humbug few have a louder voice than 35,000 generally well-behaved, fun-loving majority having the time of their lives? We should embrace it instead of nitpicking. It's a perfect complement to events like the Hat Fair and the annual festival, all helping to make us a fully rounded community, not one over-biased towards those who shout loudest against events like Boomtown. Chris Cowan, Hairstock Road, Winchester.
Thank you, Albie. Now, if you would like to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can ring 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836. Or you can email, that's news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. You can also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We now go on to historical items, starting with Roz, please.
I start with 200 years ago, September the 13th, 1813. Dresden Army attacked by Allied Army. The Moniteur of the 6th, which arrived yesterday, contains three bulletins from Bonaparte to the French Empress. The great event which took place was the attack of Dresden by the Allies, whose army is stated to have consisted of 410,000 strong, including the 110,000 which covered Berlin. At 4 in the afternoon of the 26th, six columns of the Allies with 300 pieces of artillery descended from the hills in the plain, and the attack began. In the commencement, the Allies appeared to have the advantage, having got to the foot of the suburbs. Bonaparte determined to make a sally with his whole army out of the city, and the Allies returned to the hills without much confusion or disorder. The French acknowledged the loss of 4,000 men and 8 or 10 generals on that day.
100 years ago, two American ladies, sorry, I beg your pardon, that was on September the 13th, 1913. Two American ladies who were on a visit to Winchester yesterday week had rather a curious experience. They had called at the shop of Messrs. Ross and Sons, jewellers on the High Street, and one, having made a purchase, discovered that she had lost her purse, containing both gold and silver coins. The hour was 3:07, and they intimated that they were returning to London by the 3:22 express. Mr. Ross offered to do what he could, and at once communicated the facts to the police, who replied that a purse answering the description had been brought in. The chief inspector mounted a cycle, rode off to the station, and delivered the purse to the ladies before the train departed. What a service!
50 years ago, September 14th, 1963, Alsford Show beats the weather. It takes more than overcast skies and a chill wind to rob Alsford Agricultural Show of its entertainment value. While the crowds did not roll up to Tichborne Park on Saturday in anything like the numbers of last year, when there were record gate takings, the attendance was far better than show officials could have hoped after such a threatening morning. At least the rain kept off, which is more than can be said for the fate of most of the other one-day agricultural shows this abysmal summer. With its graceful trees, Tichborne Park, the beautiful home of the show's president, Sir Anthony Doughty Tichborne, is an ideal setting for the event.
25 years ago, September the 9th, 1988, postal strike hits bill payments. Householders in Winchester have been assured that they will not be cut off if their gas and electricity bills remain unpaid as a result of the postal strike. British Gas, Southern Electricity and British Telecom have all said this week that they will be adopting a more lenient and sympathetic approach towards non-payment so long as the present troubles continue. Advertisements have already appeared in the national press urging customers not to pay their credit card bills by post, and the major power subscribers are now subscribing to the same view. Southern Electricity have suspended the dispatch of cut-off policies altogether.
Thank you. We now have Chronicle comment concerning the item about parking, and it's read by Albie, please.
Getting the balance right on parking. It seems City Council chiefs are re-evaluating car parking provision in Winchester City Centre, and it's to be welcomed. Following previously reported plans to sell off a number of car parks, including the cattle market in Andover Road, Upper Brook Street and Chesil Street for development, it appears its latest proposals could see the total number of car parking spaces increase by 519. But the draft parking strategy, which has been broadly welcomed by the business community, has come under fire from Winchester Friends of the Earth for adding to air pollution and congestion. It has criticised the strategy for promoting journeys into the car-clogged centre. While the city centre undoubtedly has unacceptable levels of pollution, it is also right to consider the economic benefits of allowing people to do business in Winchester. Traffic management must also be on the agenda as part of an overall strategy for cutting pollution. Getting the balance right is a near impossible task, but too much is at stake, both in economic and on health grounds, to get it wrong.
Thank you. Now, first person, which is read today by Ros, please.
And this week it's written by George Hayter, and it's entitled, "Will No One Speak Up for These Oppressed Orators?" Orators, I think that is. Sorry. Someone should start a pressure group to represent these people. I'm talking about a defenceless minority under attack from the rest of society. This unpopular class of person is routinely subjected to verbal abuse and prejudice. And I'm afraid it happens in Hampshire just as much as other parts of the UK. But unlike gays, immigrants, estate agents and badgers, who all have their defenders, there is no one to stick up for politicians. If the universal opprobrium heaped on MPs continues, I may even have to start a charity myself. I'm thinking of calling my not-for-profit organisation Save Our Politicians, or SOP. It will be a national body, but I don't see why my HQ should not be in Winchester. I've had my eye on an old mill in Colebrook Street, but I'm also wondering if the constabulary skyscraper might yet be available. The need is great, because people commonly say they would like to shoot the politicians, though whether their target extends to local politicians, such as our county councillors and parish councillors, isn't clear. One man assured me he was not joking and would pull the trigger himself. This surely reveals appalling ignorance and a failure by history teachers and the media to convey to their audience the value of our hard-won democracy. To those who hate politicians, I have this bombshell news. Most politicians are ordinary people who do a good job in running the country. Yes, I know the media have an almost constitutional duty to be sceptical of their policies and actions, and I concede a few MPs can't be trusted. Others are perhaps not so able and spend their time writing newsletters saying how busy they are. But evidence that most do a good job is everywhere. In statistics showing we're among the richest nations on earth, in our freedom to voice our opinions in letters to the Chronicle, and increasingly in the increasingly long lives we can expect to live. News from Italy and Japan, Syria and Egypt suggest to me that politicians in those less fortunate countries are not in the same league as ours. In every job I've had, colleagues have exaggerated their expense claims, but when our politicians are found doing the same thing, the transgression is inflated into a media event lasting months. Some of our underpaid politicians deserve their parliamentary salaries just for their TV appearances. Lovable characters like Ed Balls and Eric Pickles provide entertainment superior to anything on EastEnders. A few years ago, a book, with a title too rude to mention, claimed that Winchester was fifth in a league of undesirable places to live. The book, whose nine-letter title ended with the word towns and started with a word rhyming with rap and beginning with C, was almost as unfair as voters' contempt for their elected representatives.
Thank you. Well, that's an alternative view. And we also have an alternative look at the news now from Belgarum. Margot, could you start off these items, please?
Alsford Town Trust has announced the dates of its forthcoming Sunday street markets. On October the 27th, there will be a traditional market with a variety of food and craft stalls. There will also be a market on December the 15th with stalls from various countries. On both days, the market will be held in Broad Street and run from 9:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. The Trust organises the weekly market every Thursday from 9 a.m. to 2:30 p.m.
All hail the Littleton and Hairstock Show. Bad weather is the curse of anyone putting on or attending outdoor events in summer. So the organisers of the Littleton and Hairstock Show would have viewed the cloudy skies on Saturday with some trepidation. Thankfully, it held off for most of the annual event. But when it arrived, it was memorable, turning the recreation ground into a wintry scene. Aaron Brown from Kingsworthy, who took this photo, said, "The hailstorm was certainly something to remember, all 10 minutes of it." And this photo shows a deserted field covered in white hailstones, and in the centre of the field a sideless tent, so just the roof of the tent, with a crowd of people packed underneath it to keep out of the way of the rain and the hail.
No way to treat such a moving memorial. It was supposed to be a permanent memorial to mirror the permanent scarring of Twyford Down. The M3 extension was completed in 1994, and Belgarum well remembers that summer when a group of protesters sweated and heaved the stone plinth up the hillside on a blazing hot Sunday to erect just above the cutting. They thought it would stand, amid the noise of traffic, as a reminder of the battle to stop the road slicing through the downland. Carved into the stone are names of politicians, local and national, they blamed for the destruction. Now it has been pushed over and left lying on the turf, which seems a pretty shoddy thing to do. Johnny Bilson, who took the photograph, told Belgarum, "Although I don't agree with the sentiments expressed on the stone, I think it's a pity it's been toppled, and I hope it will be set up again." And there is a picture of this poor, humbled stone just lying alone in the grass.
The Alsford Surgery has begun its project to improve and enhance existing facilities. Construction has already started to provide 2 extra consulting rooms, a new treatment room, an upgraded reception area and new toilet facilities at its base on Station Road. The project has been in planning for 12 months, and there has been consultation with both the patient participation group and the town council. The surgery says there will be some disruption, but it plans to run without any reduction in service. Dr. Peter Stokes said, "This project will substantially increase our capacity to consult and treat the patients of the Alsford surgery. In addition, both the internal and external appearance will be significantly improved. The plans are available to view in the present reception area."
King's Cut keeps the lads happy. It may not be high fashion, but the King's haircut has been keeping barbers busy as the autumn term starts in Winchester. Teenage boys, often monosyllabic, can be lost for words when asked how they want their hair cut. But all they have to do is mumble about going to King's School, and snippers immediately know what to do. Cut the hair above their ears and off the collar. It's not just parents and pupils who know the school's strict uniform rules, it seems.
Plasma and pyramids elemental in Aragorn's art. It's not often you stumble across an intricate metal pyramid being built in a Shawford shed. Yet wielding his plasma cutter, sculptor Aragorn Dick Reed, 47, born in the British Virgin Islands, has done just this. Visiting his parents in Hampshire, Aragorn experimented with a range of polished metals, cut out silhouette shapes, and the use of light to create a pyramid containing fire for a one-off show for private art collector Morwood Arts. Currently designing his next piece, a 7-foot cube encompassing the four elements for the Hauser and Wirth Art Gallery in Bruton, Aragorn is currently looking at building in the Shawford barn of Shawford Farm once again. He spends his time drifting between Hampshire, Somerset and Italy, supporting his Italian wife Frederica and their two boys Caber and Zonti. And there are two wonderful pictures associated with this article. One is a picture of Aragorn working with his plasma cutter with lots of flames and sparks flying, and then the other of the structures themselves, which are massive metallic balls on fire. Wonderful.
Thank you. Well, we've now got some items of news from the surrounding towns and villages, starting with you, Margot, please.
Compton, Shawford, Twyford, Otterbourne and Coldon Common. A village agent role is being advertised in Twyford and Coldon Common to help elderly residents. As part of a volunteer programme running until 2015, launched by Hampshire County Council, an agent is needed to help increase and improve communication for older people living independently in the community. Providing 4 to 6 hours a week of face-to-face contact for those less likely to use the internet, this role comes with fire safety training, and the successful candidate will be supplied with a mobile phone and laptop. This role comes as a result of the Village Agent programme, which has shown that weekly activities have made a difference to older people living independently in Hampshire.
South Wanston Village Hall Cinema is screening The Great Gatsby on Saturday, September 21st. Directed by Baz Luhrmann, the film stars Leonardo DiCaprio and Carey Mulligan. There are two showings, a matinee at 2:30 p.m. and evening show at 7:30 p.m. Tickets can be bought from the village shop.
Town plans a thank you for its residents. Parish councillors in Bishop's Waltham have given the green light for a thank you party. On Tuesday, they approved a budget of £700 to thank residents for their ongoing contribution to the Bishop's Waltham Development Plan. The 20-year plan will play a role in shaping how the parish will look in the future, including where 500 new homes will go. Since January, more than 40 residents have worked on it, and a series of public consultation initiatives spearheaded by Councillor Robert Shields have seen even more parishioners share their time and experience. It's the least we can do. We have run this development plan on peanuts, frankly. We have a budget of £5,000, which we've hardly touched, Councillor Shields said. Councillors said a similar party was held to thank the people of Bishop's Waltham for their work on a previous market town health check. Councillors voted unanimously in favour of allocating the cash, which organisers estimate would see about £10 a head spent on food and drink for 50 attendees, with a further £200 earmarked for contingencies. The event is slated for the evening of Friday, October the 11th, at the Priory Park Clubhouse.
Hilliers at Chelsea and the Olympic Parks is the theme of the next meeting of South Wanston Gardening Club on Thursday, September the 26th. Andy McKindo from Hilliers has been booked as guest speaker at the 8 p.m. meeting in the Village Hall. Organisers promise an interesting and enjoyable evening, presented by a Chelsea gold medal winner of many years standing. Non-members are welcome.
T. Tickets have gone on sale for a harvest supper in Barton Stacey Village Hall on Sunday, October 6th. Before the traditional supper, there will be a full choral evensong harvest festival celebration in All Saints Church, starting at 6 p.m. Barton Stacey Chamber Choir, conducted by Kate Chapman, will lead the singing. Everyone is welcome.
Well, those were the regular features chosen for you this week, so let's have a look at items of general news. And could we start, please, with Roz?
Police stress levels rising, says report. Rising numbers of police officers and staff in Hampshire are going off sick with stress-related illnesses, it has been revealed. More and more people through all ranks are cracking under pressure as workloads mount while numbers of people are slashed in a bid to save money, with many being signed off long-term. Constabulary bosses admit they are concerned as they face ending the year with the highest rate of sickness since 2010, and say a number of measures have and continue to be put in place to help the 5,600-strong workforce. The Police and Crime Commissioner, PCC, is also so alarmed he has levelled questions at the Chief Constable, while the Police Federation, representing rank-and-file officers, have demanded the issue is tackled. The figures come just a week after it was revealed that Hampshire Constabulary, which has already shaved £55 million from its budget, is facing further cuts of £25
million. College still inspires Tim after 27 years. I feel as though I've just started in the job, said Tim Jackson, principal of Sparshall College for the past 15 years. Clearly, his enthusiasm hasn't dimmed. Asked what he enjoys most about his job, he cites the college's mission statement, to inspire learners to recognise and achieve their full potential. At Sparshall, this ranges from students with learning disabilities, including Down syndrome, learning to live independently, to high flyers achieving a degree. It may be one of England's best-known agricultural colleges, with farms stretching over 758 acres. But it also boasts an aquatic centre, equine centre, and new sports complex. It has trained more than 1,500 zookeepers over the past 10 years and runs the only course accredited by British and Irish Society of Zoos and Aquariums. Plans in the pipeline include a new rural centre for sustainable living. The idea is people will be able to see how low carbon and renewable technologies in action. The educational facilities will provide training in skills needed for a green economy. For example, scientific and engineering skills for wind farms and tidal power. The 55-year-old principal, who is a patron of Winchester Action on Climate Change, was recently recognised for his outstanding contribution to the local economy at the annual Winchester Business Excellence Awards. He was awarded the Millennium Egg, crafted by Jeremy France Jewellers, in Winchester in 2000. It is the business community's equivalent to the Lifetime Achievement Oscar for serving the local economy. He said, I accepted it on the understanding it was a reflection of the work of my colleagues and the college and what has been achieved in the business community. The college, which has a £32 million turnover, describes itself as a specialist further education college, a specialist higher education college, and a corporate college. Next year, Sparshield will be celebrating 100 years in its current location.
Turning art upside down. Nature has been turned on its head at a topsy-turvy new art installation. Resuscitare is a ring of gilded upside-down trees which have been planted in the grounds of Mottisfont Abbey by artists Elfida Hadzi-Vasileva. As autumn progresses and the leaves fall from the living trees, the installation will be gradually revealed in all its glory, she says. Visitors to Resuscitare can obtain free entry to Mottisfont until December the 1st by visiting the Art South website and printing off a voucher. The installation also forms part of Mottisfont's Autumn Feast programme, a season of walks, workshops and family fun that encompasses glorious autumn colour and food and arts-related events. And there are two pictures, one of an upside-down tree with its root at the top. And the other picture shows the artist Elpida Hadzi-Vasileva with her work in the background, the ring of gilded trees upside down, roots at the top. And also in the photograph is John Surplice, who contributed to the work.
Football coach Tom scores on the X Factor. Ex-Peter Simmons College student Tom Mann proved he had the X Factor last Sunday night by impressing Sharon Osbourne in the hit TV talent show. After appearing in front of 4,000 people in the Wembley Arena, as well as the infamous panel of judges, the teenager is now through to the boot camp stage. The 19-year-old football coach and devoted Saints fan impressed all four judges, including the previously doubting Sharon Osbourne, after ditching his guitar to sing a solo performance of How You're Doing by Little Mix. Tom from Chandlesford said afterwards, "It was relief, pure relief. I could have fluffed it and it would have been the end of my journey." Cheering him were his mum and dad, Steve and Jill, along with his two sisters Sophie and Abby and his brother Greg. Also rooting for him were children he coaches in football at the Hub at Bishopstoke Recreation Ground. He said, "When I started singing, the crowd reacted and that gave me a lot of confidence. But I was wary that I was shutting my eyes when I was singing and not connecting with the crowd and judges. I think Gary Barlow stopped the singing, saying he'd heard enough. But all the comments were positive, and Sharon was a lot more upbeat." Now Tom, a former pupil of Thorndon School in Chandlesford, will go forward to the boot camp where he will hone his skills ready to battle it out for the rest of the contest.
Fundraiser to help preserve churches. Nearly 400 churches across Hampshire are celebrating a charity's 25th anniversary by taking part in a massive bike ride. Hampshire and the Ireland's Historic Churches Trust, abbreviated to HIHCT, is asking churches to open their doors for this year's Ride and Stride as it passes the quarter century milestone. The sponsored cycle and walk is just one part of a massive fundraising exercise to mark the HIHCT's Silver Jubilee, which aims to raise £60,000 to help churches and chapels across the county. The Trust has raised more than £1 million since it began in 1988. Prominent Hampshire figures will be taking part in the event by either walking or riding, including the bishops of Basingstoke and Winchester and North West Hampshire MP Sir George Young and his wife Aurelia. HICT Chairman Lady Appleyard said, "Churches need our help with upkeep and repairs because there is no government or public funding in place to preserve these wonderful and historic buildings. This year we are hoping a record number of riders and striders will show their support for what are some of the most magnificent churches to be found anywhere in the world. It is a great joy and privilege to play a part in helping to look after them and to ensure that they are there for future generations to enjoy." The event is being held this Saturday, September the 14th, with a prize on offer of a return ticket to the Isle of Wight to the family that raises the most cash. Visit www.hihct.org.uk for more information. Shall I repeat that? Visit www.hihct.org.uk for more information.
Royal Mail to recruit 300 more posties for Christmas rush. A jobs bonanza is in the pipeline as the Royal Mail prepares to recruit hundreds of festive posties in Hampshire for an expected bumper Christmas rush. Some 300 workers are needed to help sort out the Christmas post and parcels. Thanks to increasing amounts of people buying online, the Royal Mail is having to hire a larger temporary workforce. The short-term posts are part of a nationwide recruitment drive by Royal Mail, which will employ more than 21,000 seasonal staff across the country between early November and January 2014, with the peak of the employment drive being in December. In Hampshire, this will mean a total of 286 staff being employed, with 44 jobs in Eastleigh and 242 in Southampton. Mark Higson, Managing Director of Operations and Modernisation, said, "Christmas is the busiest time of the year for the Royal Mail, and we will plan all year round to help ensure we deliver the best possible service to our customers. Every Christmas, we make a substantial financial commitment in additional resources to handle the festive mailbag, including the recruitment of thousands of temporary workers. The seasonal work is to help the Royal Mail's permanent workforce of 124,000 people around the country."
Jemima, a step closer to realising her dream. A campaign to help a Winchester girl undergo life-changing surgery in the USA is well on its way, thanks to a generous donation. After reading the story in last week's Hampshire Chronicle, charity The Barker Mill Foundation has handed over £10,000 to the campaign. 5-year-old Jemima Sivray was born with cerebral palsy and needs surgery on her spine and intense physiotherapy so that she can eventually walk unaided. Supported by her parents, Joe and Andrew of Norlands Drive, Otterbourne, Jemima is now another step closer to achieving her goal. Tim Jobling, trustee of the Hampshire-based Charitable Foundation, said, "When we heard Jemima's story, we knew we wanted to do all we could to help her family raise the much-needed funds. The surgery can potentially change this little girl's life, and we are really pleased that we can be a part of making it happen. We really hope the donation raises further awareness of Jemima's campaign, encouraging further support to help them reach their target figure." And here we have a photograph of Jemima's parents, Joe and Andrew, and Tim Jobling, but Jemima herself, a beautiful, smiling child, on a pink wheelchair with a matching pink cardigan.
Deirdre weaves her magic with textiles. A weaver from Winchester has been recognised for her groundbreaking technique. Deirdre Wood is this year's winner of the Peter Collingwood Trust Prize, a national award for the most innovative loom-based textile. Mrs. Wood, aged 64, was recognised for her inventive circular weaving technique used to create woven rings and discs. "I'm absolutely thrilled. I actually entered after I stumbled across the competition on the internet," she said. The new approach uses the contrasting properties of linen and silk to create rings and discs. Although the cloth is woven straight, it becomes dramatically curved when cut from the loom and treated by finishing processes. "It's a fairly fundamental shift in weaving. It could have many new applications and could be used for anything. It doesn't have a name, really. I just call it circular weaving, or curved weaving," she said. She was also handed £1,000 for her efforts, which will be used to complete the studio she works from at home in Hyde Street. Founded in memory of one of Britain's most celebrated weavers, the prize was given in recognition of Deirdre's unique and inventive circular weaving technique that she uses to create woven rings and discs. Deirdre, who has lived and worked in Winchester for almost 30 years, works as a hand weaver and dyer, creating abstract architectural tapestries using silk, linen, cotton, and wool. Strip-woven fabric has long been a fascination for Deirdre, and on winning the Clothmaker's Travel Award while a student in 1996, she travelled to Mali, West Africa, to study Bergulanfini and indigo textiles produced by the Bamama and Dogon tribespeople. Earlier this year, Deirdre was one of three textile artists selected to represent the UK at the 14th Annual Triennial of Tapestry in Poland.
New fleet of 32 greener buses launched. An Eastleigh-based company has launched 32 new buses following a £6.19 million investment. Andrew Wickham, Managing Director of Go South Coast, a group of bus and coach operators in the region, was joined by Paul Coyne, Operations Manager for Blue Star, as they officially launched the new environmentally friendly low-emission buses. Company bosses say the new fleet is more comfortable and also has free Wi-Fi, wheelchair and baby buggy space. Staff will also sport new uniforms. Seven of the new British-built Enviro 400 double-deck buses will serve the Blue Star 1 Winchester to Southampton route. Mr. Wickham said, "This major investment reaffirms our commitment to providing the best possible service to our customers in Hampshire. We expect passengers will enjoy the gift of travelling in comfort and style."
And I have an item here about Adam Knott. And Winchester Talking Papers has a particular affection for Adam. He came to our annual general meeting and talked about his efforts in the Olympics last year. Goalball, if you don't know, is a game of ball for partially sighted participants. The game is played in silence so that the players can identify where the ball is and how near the goal, because it has a bell in it, and that's the only way they can judge where the ball is on the court. Adam is an experienced player. However, this item is entitled Knott's Euro Agony. Adam Knott endured a bittersweet time as Great Britain's goalball team suffered an agonising European Championship promotion failure. The Chalmersford player, who appeared for Great Britain in last year's London Olympics, was the C Division tournament's top scorer at St John's in Worcester. Knott ended with 32 goals as Great Britain won all eight of their qualifying group matches, the country's best winning streak for more than a decade. But the hosts were then beaten 7-5 by Portugal in their semi-final game before losing 7-2 to Italy in the bronze medal playoff. The double defeat was a cruel blow at the end of a glorious run through the group stages. Russia were crowned champions after beating Portugal. And I'm sure Adam would have felt that loss very, very keenly.
Info Day on Barton Farm. Detailed plans for the first phase of the Barton Farm development are to go on display next week. The Information Day is to be held at the Guildhall on Wednesday, September the 18th, between 12 noon and 7:30 p.m. The plans on show are for around 430 private and affordable homes, as well as for the public open spaces to the south and north of the site. It will be an opportunity to see the proposed mix of house types, layout and landscaping of phases 1A and 1B. Representatives from developer Carla and from architects and master planners John Thompson and Partners will be on hand to answer questions. Carla also announced last week the appointment of Rob Westwood as project director for Barton Farm. Mr. Westwood said, "The event is part of our ongoing commitment to keeping the local community updated on our plans for Barton Farm. We held a consultation event in June to get feedback and comments on our proposals for phases 1A and 1B and have taken that feedback on board. Those attending the information day will be able to see how our plans have evolved since then and view the detail of the reserved matters application which we will be submitting to the local planning authority in the next few weeks."
Simmons seeks OK to expand. Peter Simmons College, Winchester, has applied to build a new two-storey photography building to replace the existing single-storey one, including the addition of teaching spaces and toilet facilities. Said bursar Paul Warren, "The aim is to replace the old structure with a far better facility for the students. The heating, lighting and general fabric of the old building are sorely in need of improvement. It would be part of our programme of refurbishment and replacement of building stock that has passed its useful life. The college is in receipt of funding from the Education Funding Agency specifically to contribute to such improvements around the site."
Green light for 31-bed retirement complex bid. A new retirement block will be built in Eastleigh Town Centre, despite concerns from residents' groups. Plans for the 31-bedroom complex were given the nod by councillors amid fear the building would harm the privacy of neighbouring homes. Newtown Residents Association claimed there were already too many sheltered accommodation buildings springing up in the area and believed it could lead to parking problems. And they are concerned over the amount of disturbance that will be caused during construction at the site, the former Hampshire County Council office building Russell House in Romsey Road. But members of Eastleigh Borough Council's Eastleigh Local Area Committee voted to give the scheme the green light, and residents could be moving in as early as 2015.
City art to collide for 10 days. Winchester will play host to innovative, enterprising and challenging art in unusual places this autumn. 10 days will be a collaboration between Winchester's businesses and local artists across the city, including shops, offices, the theatre, the cathedral and online, from October the 25th to November the 3rd. Last week's launch was hosted by Leslie and Stuart Carr at the Bulltop Kitchen Showroom in the High Street. Stephen Boyce, Arts Advisor for Winchester City Council, said, "This year's 10 Days event is a series of innovative, enterprising and challenging contemporary exhibitions, events and participatory projects across the Winchester district. They will take their inspiration from the idea of collision as a means of opening a conversation, solving a problem, or sharing something new." Creative director of the event, Trish Bold, said, "10 days links all sections of Winchester's community, and we would love to hear from businesses who would like to become involved through sponsorship, providing locations, or support. The event will include a range of materials such as painting, sculpture, multimedia installations, sound, textiles, theatre performance, poetry, music and dance." And this article is accompanied by a photograph of five people all busy in the launching of this 10 days collision, so-called, and they include Leslie Carr, Juliet Alexander, Trish Bold, the 10 days art director, Stephen Boyce, Winchester County Council Arts Advisor, and Kate Rains, the 10 Days Director. and they're all holding what I think must be probably champagne or bubbly of some kind, looking very happy with themselves. I hope they have every success.
Now, an article by Chronicle staff reporter, Winchester Jobs Fair offers advice and opportunities. The economy might be showing signs of improvement, according to experts, but landing that dream role is still a challenge for many job seekers. But help is at hand later this month, when the Winchester Jobs Fair comes to town. Whether you're looking for a new job, wanting to improve your interview technique, looking for tips to put together that killer CV, seeking out a training or education course, or just hoping to boost confidence and a new direction, Winchester Jobs Fair is open to everyone, whatever their age, background, skills, or qualifications. Organised by the Hampshire Chronicle, the Jobs Fair will be held at the Guildhall in Winchester on Thursday, September 26, between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. Already, more than 20 stall holders have signed up to exhibit, and there will also be a number of job seminars run by exhibitors, including tips on how to get into journalism by Keith Redbourne, editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. In addition to the exhibitor stands, the National Careers Service will be running one-to-one advice clinics, as well as holding two seminars covering the following topics. Create a winning CV. What should a CV contain and not contain? Personal profile. Work skills. Personal skills and qualities. Employment history and dealing with gaps in your work history. Education and training, and much more. Commenting on the current jobs market, Lucy Jackson, the Chronicle's recruitment manager, said, "It is not all doom and gloom. There are jobs out there. The Jobs Fair is going to give people the opportunity to talk to a variety of companies about potential careers, apprenticeships, and get a feel for what is on offer, all under one roof." And there's a photograph with visitors, job seekers, at the Jobs Fair, and showing the throng of people seeking out advice and information from the various stallholders around.
Well, thank you, everyone. That concludes the Hampshire Chronicle extracts for this week. A reminder again that Lynn Parker is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number, again, is 01962 862826. Many thanks to our hard-working editor, Barbara Chase, and thanks also to the copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thank you to our readers, Margot.
Goodbye.
Albie.
Goodbye.
And Roz.
Goodbye.
And from me, Peter, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. When you have finished with this week's recording, would you please put the memory stick in the wallet and return it to us as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you and goodbye.